So I thought that maybe we could begin with a statement that you had written in 2008, doing art politically, what does this mean? And I guess specifically we wanted you to specify for us some different elements of your practice. In that text you specify, for instance, almost a series of principles. Doing art politically means using art as a tool. Doing art politically means building a platform with the work. Doing art politically does not mean working for or against the market. Doing art politically means working for the other. And there's a series of others that other principles that you establish there, almost in the way of a manifesto. And so I guess the first question was, could you formalize for us, let's say, the underlying questions or methodology or methodologies? It seems that there's not one methodology or one question. It seems there's a series of methodologies and questions. But so how do you, when approaching a particular project, how do you negotiate the issues and the parameters and the conditions and the possibilities?
You know, when I wrote this, there are 10, in fact, 10 points. What means working politically? When I wrote this, it was a response on that a lot of people use the word, this is, in meaning me, this is an engaged artist, mm-hmm. this is a political artist. Mm-hmm. So I felt this is the moment now to clarify what does it mean. Because to me, every young art, every artist is engaged, mm-hmm. is completely engaged with his work. So that makes no sense. And then I wanted to create my own terms. What means it not to be a political artist, but to working politically? Mm-hmm. Yes? So that's why these 10 points. So each point of them is based on one of the points I want to touch with my work, either the reception or the audience, or the material, or how to work, how to lay out the work, etc. So I wanted with this, you know, to throw it down to, how can I say, to put it a little bit down to the real problems I have as an artist. Mm-hmm. And the problem is the form, how to give form to my position, or how to give a form to the problems who I feel competent not to resolve, but to express, because my competence is the problems I feel facing the world. So that's why these 10 points.
And so right now, what would be those problems? At this moment, what are the problems that you're trying to negotiate?
For example, one of the problems is, since the last years, I use photos of destroyed bodies. Mm-hmm. Quite a lot. And I feel that it's not understood. A lot of people say to me, we don't understand, we don't want to see, I cannot see it, mm-hmm. I don't need to see it. And that I know that people think like this, but I want to insist to show them, but I feel now, and I made it several times, but I feel I have to work it not only in my work it out, but also in giving the right terms, and the right terms for me, why I use it. So there, and I started to think mm-hmm. about, this is my problem, to think about why I used it, what is interest me in this, and why I think we must see them, not only me. Mm-hmm. So this is one of my problem, actually, I'm working on.
I mean, so this is also then would be linked to the Hotel Democracy Project, which has in the rooms these images as well.
Or they're not there.
These are not there.
Hotel Democracy.
Those are different. Those are the Guantanamo images and so on.
No, Hotel Democracy was more people in conflict situation. That's true. But not in
but not dead
the
bomb,
result
okay.
in of the violence.
Okay.
Hotel Democracy was only about people with weapons trying to give a kind of force to their revendications.
Mm-hmm.
That was my idea, to bring them together, like in a hotel, together, where the where they are for a night or for a stay, and to have everybody has his own room, his own revendication, his own problems, his own people he's fighting for, and what they share together is the weapon, actually, the you know, how they try to give force to their revendications.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
is Hotel Democracy.
And in terms of the insistence also, though, in that project that people have to see certain kinds of images, whether it be of these conflict situations or these dead bodies, there is an insistence that these are the kinds of images that people ought to be seeing and witnessing at this particular moment.
So I think it's important, the insistence, and it's important the redundance. I don't know if this is the right word, the redundance of these pictures. Why? Because I think people likes to have icons, to have icons. And actually, the medias like to have an icon, to define this is an icon, and then this icon has his function and tells us about this. And I mean, in the past, that had a function, I think. For example, I think in the Vietnam War, there were several, I don't know a lot of pictures, but 3-4 pictures, and we all know there are 3-4 icons, very beautiful, very strong, very important pictures. They did change, actually, the mind of the people, and they did have a big impact on the war, of course. And they were very important to change it. They were made by photographers, very good photographers. I mean, they were chosen by 100, sometimes perhaps one film, or perhaps even three films, or 100 of pictures perhaps. The best one was chosen, though, with a kind of photographical quality. That gave an icon. And now, I think it's changed completely, because the pictures have still a very strong impact, but they are not more pictures made by photographers. They make pictures made by soldiers, by the safety people who come to save the lives of the people, or to clean, or to just witnesses, you know. And these people are these people has not a very technological tools. They just put their mobile phone or so. And this picture has no more quality. So photographical quality, they just show something, and even it's not, they have not this kind of label of authenticity. So, but they are redundant. There are a lot of people often and have this. And I think this is the thing. This is what it change. Because the pictures, and for example, I must say, for example, pictures today as well have impact. For example, Abu Ghraib, you know, and these people was not made by photographer, embedded photographer, but often by soldiers themselves. So now, that's why I think the redundance is something new and has to be on this light to be seen differently and new today. But there is a reaction, a big reaction. The reaction is still to want to show us icons. For example, there was the dead of Bin Laden. Okay? So, because we cannot see the dead body, so somebody invited a new icon. It's the Situation Room. Okay? And then the journalists, and when I say the journalists, I don't mean only the journalists. I mean the whole machine of comments, of the facts, of you know, of the information, you know, the whole information system needs or use this as an icon to speak of something else, and that's something I completely refuse, and I don't work in this kind of ideology to to not show, but to speak about this kind of picture, which I think has absolutely no interest. So this is why insistence on these people and not icon, creating of a new icon.
So could you speak, so what would be an example of something in response to that iconography that you're trying to resist? What would be an example of something that you're doing now?
I mean, I did a work even already a few years ago, 2006. It's called The Incommensurable Banner. The Incommensurable Banner is a banner, big banner, 18 meter long, with only pictures of destroyed bodies, with violent, by violent actions, very destroyed, very horrible. But, and of course, I mean, there is, and absolutely without information why these people, these men or women, are in this situation. So, because this is the other part, not only the redundance, not only the anti-icon, but also the information. Because we are used and we are trained, and even we are under this dictatorship of the information, who wants to tell us who is or what we see, in fact. So, and then of course with the idea to tell us this is a bureau or this is a victim. Yes. So there is, in my banner, there are no victims in this way, no bureaus. There are only dead bodies. And to me, I wanted the redundance. I wanted the no information. I wanted it. And I wanted the no icon, of course, with this. So this is, I mean, a try, how I try to deal with this problem today.
One of the things that what you're saying reminds me of is, and it's one of my favorite passages, it's a passage in Krakauer's 1927 essay, Photography, and he's talking about the proliferation of images in illustrated magazines and newsreels in the 20s. And at a certain moment, he says, there's never been an age that has known so much about itself. If knowing about itself means having a series of images that give you what is taking place and so on. But then he talks about the massive proliferation, which he calls the blizzard of photographs, and the way in which this blizzard of photographs actually produces a strike against understanding. So that by the end of the paragraph, what he says is that we have never lived in an age that has known so little about itself. And there's some way in which, when you're talking about the redundancy of the image, the lack of information, the non-iconicity of the image, that there's a way in which, I guess one question would be whether or not this is an effort on your part to stage this problem or to counter it. And the reason I'm asking this is because when you were describing the project, the Hotel Democracy, and also the images of the dead bodies and so on, this insistence that people have to see these images at this particular moment, especially because in the Hotel Democracy project, you're saying these were images that whose central strand or signature was the figure of the weapon. There's a way then, in a certain sense, that these works, the ones that you're mentioning now and talking about, I'm wondering to what extent you see them as weapons against the different, let's say, as part of a struggle against iconicity, against the decontextualization that takes place with the proliferation and redundancy of images, but at the same time make this a series of works that become weapons in that fight. And the reason I that's part of it, but the reason that I'm asking this is because in the manifesto that Aaron referred to, at one point you talk about how doing art politically means using art as a tool. And for me, the resonance there is Benjamin's work of art, where he talks about writing a series of theses that would be totally useless for fascism, but useful for the revolutionary struggle. So there's a way in which part of what he's against is a certain kind of instrumentality. So that when one talks about art as a tool or as a weapon, it raises all kinds of questions about agency and the relationship between an artwork and the creator and so on. But I'm wondering if you could say something in regard to
that. I think time has changed.
Which means that...
Which means today... People are interested in making from themselves a profile.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interested in real communication, but they're interested in control their in their mm-hmm. communication. They're interested in giving from themselves a picture mm-hmm. with Facebook, with mm-hmm. Twitter, with all mm-hmm. this. You know. Mm-hmm. We are completely, so I think, in this blizzard. Mm-hmm. But I think the blizzard, we adopted it completely.
Yeah.
We are
yeah.
part of it completely.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah. And that's why I think it has changed,
mm-hmm.
completely changed, because we are part of it. We do it. Everybody of us
mm-hmm.
does it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when you do it and don't do it, and me don't do it, that never changes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think yeah. this is something we are, it's really changed.
Mm-hmm.
Then,
do you think it's a qualitative change or just an intensification and acceleration of what was already taking place?
I think it's perhaps both, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't thought about it. But for me, it's a change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But probably it's an acceleration who after switched to a
right.
change.
Right.
So, okay, that's the first thing. So, for example, internet, you know, with the accessibility of everything, you know, even when now, again, we want to control it, and you know, it, I mean, that's normal that everything after you has to be again under control, etc., etc. But internet did changes a lot of things. That I think what you say that they're into, for example, the affirmation: use art as a tool or as a weapon. Actually,
mm-hmm.
it's not from me; it's from John Hartfield. But
mm-hmm.
okay, he told photography, but. in this is to me the will of course to have the mission, to working in a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And when you ask me in your work, do you think it can have an impact, or it can change something? Of course, I think,
mm-hmm.
and of course. I want it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say I have results.
Right.
Absolutely not.
Right.
But that's what I think and that's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not in... and I think because the time has changed, I am in this time which has changed, I think I cannot again come with the old history of the icon, for
mm-hmm.
example. So I have inside this blizzard, I have... to use the art as a tool and not to make it calm or not to put it me myself in a kind of capsule, but to be my own blizzard. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think this is what how I try to use art as a tool
mm-hmm.
or a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you say more about this? In the face of that blizzard, you reproduce a new blizzard, and you produce another blizzard. In order.
Inside it, not in face. Not it's not
yes.
facing.
I see.
I'm inside.
Yes.
You know, so I need to, yeah, I need to, inside this, completely in this chaos, I have not, I think I have not to calm it or to make it clear,
mm-hmm.
because there's no clearness,
mm-hmm.
there's no calm. I have to agree with this, but I have then inside this work out, you know, like I don't know. This is my idea. I have to inside this. I have to work out very clearly and very. I mean, that's what I try. Inside this, I have to work out a form who resists, you know, and. That's my idea, I hope, and that's why what
and
I
by
want.
Resistance, you mean undermines it, or you can't undermine it? I don't
no, know. No, not undermine, but resists as such, as a produce who, you know, as such, I mean, not undermine, because then I'm again in the blizzard, you know, because I don't, how can I say, I just want to, I want to touch, I know not too far, you know, it's not a frontal thing. It's a kind
mm-hmm.
inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's an inside. It's like in the body, you have to develop your own forces to resist. You know, from the inside. That's my idea.
Mm-hmm.
With with what it happened around. So, for example, I took these pictures from the internet because they are in the internet surrounding me. You know. So this is how I see.
But it's a negotiation. It's a process. It's not something that you've perfected. It's not it's not a tool. It's not a methodology in that sense. It's something that you're negotiating.
No, it's a tool. Why? No, it's not a negotiation. It's I don't understand.
The tactic. You're trying to refine and calibrate the tactic, or you feel that the tactic is there. It's just to be enacted.
I think it's reformulated is that if you're in the blizzard, if you're in the midst of it, it's not so clear that one could have full control over what one does within that blizzard.
That's true.
So that to say that you can use it as an instrument or as a tool implies a kind of control and agency that is at least complicated within the context of the blizzard.
Yeah, but look, I am facing these pictures, for example. I'm standing in front of something incommensurable, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, problematic.
Yeah.
So, also, how can I say, difficult, and difficult also for me. So, what I know, what is not to do, is to say, okay, I don't touch, because then I have no problem.
Yeah.
Okay. But in this, trying to see the forces and to touch it, because I think as an artist this should be possible today to touch, even without knowing all the consequences, this kind of incommensurability, and to be open to it and to face it and to confront it. That's what I try to do. So you told me, you know, I'm not, when I told being an artist means to be a warrior, I told you, because you need a mission, not against somebody or something, but for something, for your art, for my term of art. So that's why I'm not a tactician, for to use your word. I'm not a tactician, you know? So because there is no tactic to have, it's only one big idea to follow and one mission to follow. And even this mission perhaps is not to win. I mean, it's not, you know, it's perhaps not possible to. But that's my problem. That's what I do. That's what I'm fighting for.
But I like that, because in some way, of course, the desire, the wish is to change and alter the relations in which we live, right? But there's no program, no tactic for it.
And
Marx very famously writes to Beesley in the 1860s that anyone who has a program for the future is a reactionary. You know, that it's not predictable. It can't be programmed in any way.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is very important to me. People don't understand. Yeah. But, I mean, when you are an artist, I think you need in a kind of headlessness. I learned the word what I love. You need to act. You know, you cannot just stay back and to think how to react now on this. You know, and this means also
the politics of the acephalus.
Yeah, but this means also to take the risks and to touch things that perhaps then hurt back.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to be confronted, but that is what my problem is, to not be discouraged by people who only want to see the convulnerable of what they can control or they can
I mean, this is actually, I'm very glad you say these things, I mean, because it's, and not simply in relation to a clarification of different misunderstandings and so on, but I actually think that is, that one can always only do politics headlessly. Mm-hmm. Without knowing in advance what the consequences of what one will do, which is the risk and of any possible reform. That's the risk of reform. The reason I think that risk exists has something to do with what you were saying earlier, I think, because, I would even say that the practice that I register very often in your work has to do with the taking, as you say. You take these images off the internet, you take, passages, phrases, the pantheon of modern figures, Gramsci, Spinoza, so on, everyone that you sort of take from. This practice is also an art of appropriation, right, among other things. And that it's an, once you, you participate in an art of appropriation, which I think is what every art is an art of appropriation for me, then because you're using a language that isn't strictly speaking always just yours, there's always this risk that without your knowing it, you will reiterate, reinforce, and repeat the very thing that you want to overcome or alter. And Benjamin calls that danger. Danger is the always present possibility that without your knowing it, you can become a tool of the oppressors because you're using a language that isn't just yours. So I was thinking in regard to many of the works, and maybe this would be a moment where one can turn to these works that I'm totally fascinated by, which have to do with the works that reference these modern figures, you know, the altars, the monuments, the kiosks that you've done to these figures. And one of the things that I was thinking about is because I also I work a lot on Emerson. He's always a resource for me, as is Benjamin. And I was thinking of an essay that he wrote called "Quotation and Originality." I mean, it's this amazing little essay where he talks about how all minds quote, and every moment is the warp and woof of the past and the present, and the originals are not original. We quote tables, chairs, customs, religions, etc. There would be a history to the archangels if we but knew it, he says. But in that same essay, at a certain moment, when he's talking about how everything is in flux and we're always indebted to the past, and the old forest is decomposed in order to compose a new forest, and so on. At a certain moment, he refers to another modern figure of the Goethe, and he says that Goethe said, "What would remain to me if this art of appropriation were derogatory to genius? Every one of my writings has been furnished to me by 1,000 different persons, 1,000 things. Wise and foolish have brought me, without suspecting it, the offering of their thoughts, faculties, and experience. My work is an aggregation of beings taken from the whole of nature. It bears the name of Goethe." You know, this, so that one could say that there is this Hirschhorn, who is this aggregate of all the things that he has absorbed, taken, and so on. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that in relation to this concept that I was intrigued by in reading one of your texts, this concept of unshared responsibility. Because it seems to me that it's linked to this. I mean, it's not collaboration, but there is a way in which you immerse yourself in the blizzard, you appropriate, you mobilize, you recontextualize things that you inherit in order to produce something new and singular. And I'm wondering if that is something that you recognize as part of the practice, and if you think of it as something that involves this risk of appropriating, but then, because you're not in full control, perhaps reinforcing, reiterating what you want to go on. Does this make sense as a...
Yes and no. Yes, but I think it's the word... I also use another word, excessive responsibility, means to take the responsibility about what you are not responsible for. The problem today of responsibility is nobody, everybody won't not be responsible.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. Nobody said, okay, I'm responsible, even when he's not responsible. Right. That's the big problem of today, absolutely. I think. I mean, on my level, on my small level as an artist, each exhibition, it's the same. Somebody, you make an exhibition, somebody, or in a museum, for example, in a gallery, somebody can say, I cannot take this responsibility. You must have 1.20 meter exit, or it's not fireproof, I cannot take the responsibility. Or I cannot take the responsibility that kids see these pictures, you know. Right. It's only about responsibility, you know. And refuse. So I tell them, I take the responsibility. Yeah. But they give a shit on my responsibility because they don't believe that I am responsible for, you know. So the concept of responsibility in their way is absolutely not what I think the responsibility is. Yeah. But it's just because they have a power on the top of them and they are afraid about the power when something happens. Okay, this is the more about excessive responsibility. And that's an
only kind of responsibility.
Yeah, or all kind. Absolute must be
for
excessive.
For responsibility to be responsibility absolutely. Has to must, be excessive.
Yes, absolutely. Complete. Yeah. That's one thing. So the unshared responsibility is not completely the same, but of course has to do with this. But it's more, for example, the work with my friend, my philosopher friend, Markus Steinweg, but also with others, Manuel Joseph, who is a poet, or others. And we are, for example, Marcus completely agree, unshared responsibility. The problem is, again, and this is related to all of this, is today the people say, okay, we work together, okay? So you are responsible for this, and I am responsible for this. And when we are not agree, we discuss together, and we find kind of consensus. Yeah. So our idea was, and this is the idea, the new one, unshared responsibility. Not to share the responsibility, but to say, okay, I'm responsible for the whole, what me I do, of course, but also what you are doing completely. Yeah. And you are responsible for what I do and also what you do, of course. What means this? It means, and that's new and that's great, no discussion. You may perhaps not like this, but no discussion, no negotiation, no deal, no...
I like that. You
know, no deal, no compromise. Yeah. It's just take over the whole responsibility. And why it is nice and why it's beautiful? Because when you do this, really, then at one point, there is a situation you are confronted to something you didn't expect or you didn't think about or you cannot imagine because it's actually not made with your responsibility. It's made with the idea of unshared responsibility. And then you are in a situation I think is new and very interesting because you have to really take over the responsibility for it. And this is how I think is collaboration or working with others or teamwork or whatever you want, fantastic and new, you know, the unshared responsibility. So this is what we try to do together, but also what I try to do when I work with others. And also why it is nice for me as an artist that, you know, in fact, you have not to discuss it all the time. I'm not afraid about discussion at all, but it's not to discuss, you know, it's to do or not to do, it's to set up or not to set up. Yeah. And this is how this, there is something who I believe and who I really try to do, that it keeps his strength as a setup in this world and as kind of... thing who is completely autonomous. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's why unshared responsibility is something important. Yeah.
And what of Eduardo's question about whether your name is an aggregate?
I mean, mine is not my name, but I understand what you see. Yeah. You know...
Every last name is an aggregate.
No, but I mean... I like the idea because I think, it's important to aggregate. It's also battery. Can we say battery? Battery. Yeah. I mean, and I want to have my work, not my name, but my work as a battery, a pure energy, of course. Yeah. I see it like this. And myself as an artist, I understand myself as a kind of power station for myself, you know, with my own power, you know, and in order to interfere to other powers and other power station and, you know, without, and with modesty, but just keep this autonomy as a power station yourself. Yeah. Yes.
Which is a different kind of autonomy. No,
yes,
a different kind, because
if
you say that the work of art as you stage it, as you build it and so on, is itself this mass of relations, you know, because it's never simply a single thing, it's always many things at once, it's very linked to what you're calling this power station, right, with this battery, that you, Hirschhorn, are yourself a mass of relations, which is why your responsibility is excessive.
Yeah, right? Because each artist is, for me, each artist or philosopher also is, I think, his own. You know what I like in art is.
What do you like in art?
Yeah, no, I mean, I like a lot of things in art.
Thomas Hirschhorn, what do you
like? No, but you know, that I.
Yo, Tom, what do you like?
What I really like is that I can, you know, I can stand up and work out my term of art and try to make it the brightest as I can. But, and why it is nice? Because there are a lot of others who do it, and that's great. Because it's like when I go to see the galaxy in the night, there are so a lot of stars shining in the room, and they make together the galaxy. So and I want to be one of these, you know? Sometimes brighter, sometimes less bright. It means not, because perhaps why far away. It means even not less less lightful.
Right.
It means
right.
just perhaps far away.
Right.
So that's why I like the term of galaxy. So what I like, I can, as an artist, to be a part of this galaxy.
Right.
And also one thing, when my star, for example, is falling down to, for example, completely, it's not a problem. The galaxy will shine also, like it happened.
Yeah.
So this is how I think this power station is, is working. And, I mean, without pretension, only my pretension or my pretension, only my energy, my will, my pleasure to bright.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for in a way.
Mm-hmm. No, that's beautiful, and also it also as a as a star in the galaxy and in the constellation. I mean, it's a figure that also confirms your inscription within a network of relations.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right, so,
yes. So, and to me also, when I would like, because I made a small artwork, so I called it Philosophical Galaxy. That's the same for philosophers. I think, look, when there is one is not there, okay, there are a lot of others. But together, they make the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And also philosopher, I mean, they make a lot of connections to other philosophers. There is a whole galaxy. What I like is this, to see, wow. And, you know, and what is nice, you can add another star in this galaxy.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, it's not against the other or against the existing or so, but it's one more possibility, one more light, one more star when you want.
I mean, my only wished for revision of your little figure is that I would say that each star is itself already its own galaxy, multiple galaxies, so that each one is already multiple galaxies. So it's not just one star, because again, it's not single. It's already a constellation. Each one is already a series of constellations.
So now we go to the macro. Yes.
Blizzards, galaxies.
Not bad. I have a question about terminology. You've gone to great lengths, many of us have, to distance yourself from certain definitions that are prevalent today. Definitions that are community-based or public art, etc. And it seems that you've mentioned many times that you feel that these are in a way thoughtless and kind of almost useless terms. And so I guess I wanted you to explain in something like Deleuze Monument, in something like Bataille Monument, in a Spinoza festival, where you're trying to reproduce in a fairly collaborative way civic institutions, cafeterias, libraries, etc. How would you distinguish that from what we tend to think of as community, inclusive, collaborative processes? What's different in a way about these practices? Or what do you feel is misunderstood if it's talked about in that other way?
I mean, first of all, I'm not killing myself because there is a misunderstanding. You know, I'm happy. This is my habit to have them, but it's only that I don't want to inscribe my work inside this because I don't know what it is, but I know something, and I made these two terms. I created them, presence and production. Uh-huh. This project you spoke, not the Deleuze Monument, because at the Deleuze Monument, with the experience of the Deleuze Monument, I understood that I have to invent something really different. Mm-hmm. Because on the Deleuze Monument, I was not there all the time, and I didn't really produce something on the spot. Mm-hmm. So I learned that from this point on, that's why from Bataille Monument on, the other projects you mentioned are presence and production projects. Mm-hmm. So this is the difference. Why it is different? Because presence and production, again, I am responsible for. Because I know I am there or not there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The problem what I have with, for example, the term of participation, which I hate and which I think is an insult to the whole history of art, because each artwork has the power to implicate directly the other. Even a Renaissance painting, but just you cannot see it, how the person is touched and how his heart is open themselves, or I don't know what happened in her heart or in his mind, but you know, that's why it is an insult. And secondly, of course, participatory art, for example, just to take this, there are other terms, is a term, created in order to control, in order to measure the functionality, and in order to after have a result on it. But when there is something without, who should be without result also, without measurable functionality, it must be art, I believe. So that's why I invented presence and produce, because this I can myself do.
So can you narrate me through something like Bataille Monument, Spinoza Festival? I've seen what other people have written about it. I've seen your work in museums and in galleries, but can you explain to me what, like, for instance, what was at play there? What were you trying to
walk us through? One.
So there are three things, very important, general things. Yeah. The first is the location, where it is. So because when you have a project in public space, which is different in gallery or museum space, or because in the museum they told you have this wall, you have the small space, you have the big space, you're on the top floor, on the ground floor, I don't know. Okay, in the public space, perhaps there are also restrictions, for example, a city or a neighborhood or perhaps a country, or I don't know. But then there's the first very important thing. I can decide where to put my work. Very important. So this is something constitutive, because it's not about accepting that somebody tell you, we want a public statue in front of the house of the governor. You know what I mean? So this is the first point. So where it is. So I can decide. Secondly, the time. I mean, you mentioned Bataille Monument, Musée Précaire Albinet, Spinoza Festival, etc. Their works limited in time. Precarious, I say. So they are limited in time, and this is as well an assertion of that perhaps today a monument or a work in public space should be limited in time. Yes, that means he has a time of life intense there and then disappears. It not means it can be perhaps on another place, another situation, another time. But this is possible. So in order to underline the importance of the moment, because perhaps you don't see it because you are in holidays. It's not a problem. It wasn't there. Or you cannot see it because you are another country, or you cannot see it because just you're not there. That's okay. That's fair. You know, because it doesn't mean because it's there, it has more or less value, artistic value. So the second is this. Okay, the duration. And the third, and in fact to me comes out of this, is when I can decide the space, when I can decide the duration, I can try in a simple and common understandable way to work with people that are not perhaps not specially interested in, they are perhaps on the spot, just there where I want to set my work. So it gives another perspective. Mm-hmm. Means to work with the neighborhood, and that's I'm interested. And then, of course, from this point on, a lot of things are possible, because you can do a lot of things with when people agree to help you and to work with you and to allow that you do it. So, and because then you are in contact with these people on this spot. So this is the three things, and I think the two first I mentioned opens the third, and then there is like an explosion of possibilities, you know, from the demands of the people, from the need of people, to your position as an artist, what you want to do or what you want to offer or not offer, what you want to assert or not assert. And that's why I inscribe my work into this, which kind of art I want to defend, which kind of autonomy of art I want to assert.
But there are always those three guidelines, those three frameworks. So like, for instance, the cafeteria or the library has to remain ephemeral.
No. Look, the cafeteria and the library, yeah. I mean, I made them 3 times now. Uh-huh. Yes, only 3 times. Uh-huh. And but for example, in the Belmar Spinoza Fest, uh-huh. I made 16, I call it beams, uh-huh. 16 beams. The cafeteria, the library was only one of them. Uh-huh. Okay, uh-huh. Only, and there were 16 other beams, you know. So I try every time to invent new beams, you know. For example, a Musée Précaire Albinet, uh-huh. I invented I think, even when it's not documented, and a nice one, I think, it was Les sorties means uh-huh. I made field trips with the people of the neighborhood to the city center, in fact, you know. So that's what I tell you. When you touch the people, then you invent, or I try to invent new possibilities, how we can work together, how my experience can be in contact with the experience of the people, or how their experience can be in contact with me. For example, in the Belmar Spinoza Festival, I made what I call running events. Okay. So running event was not an organized event from the beginning, so it was a proposition to say, okay, you want to I give the possibility, my money, my project money, and the possibility to help you the people from the spot to realize their project, you know. Mm-hmm. So because I did not know from the beginning,
I see, I see.
Because I don't know the people. So, for example, a very small example, because it was a Suriname neighborhood in the Belmar. So somebody said, I want to speak about the Suriname freedom fighter and poet Henri de Thiel Trefossa, for example. Mm-hmm. So I did not know him. Mm-hmm. In front. So, you know, this is how after, when you did touch these people, how it can work out.
I see.
I mean, I like that also because it fits very nicely with what you were saying earlier about the wish to alter and change, because it also is a process that permits you to be altered and changed, which I think is the result of any encounter. So that in some sense, one virtue of these projects that are produced in relation to a site, in relation to a neighborhood, and so on, is that it allows... It sort of formalizes and makes possible what is always possible in an encounter, which is to say, when you encounter someone else, from that moment on, you're no longer the person you were before the encounter, because you, from that moment on, bear a trace of the other in you.
Mm.
Right? So you're inhabited by a trace of them, and you're altered. And it seems that the intensification of the projects in these neighborhoods maximizes that possibility in some way. That would be the wish.
Yeah, of course. And yes. This is, but to be very, to be of course clear and also I think truthful. this is the wish, and sometimes happens in very precarious, graceful moments.
Yes, of course.
For example, because you seem interested by this question of the bar, it was not my idea. It was when I made the Deleuze monument, the kids on the neighborhood told me, Thomas, we like you, but we like your project, but it could be better when we had a point. And I said, they are right.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
So that's why at the Bataille Monument, the first time after, I made it. Because it's a good thing. Because and after I realized this really good thing, because even when the people not are interested, are not interested by Spinoza, are not interested by the art in Musée Précaire Albinet, for example, perhaps they have the possibility to come and to exchange and to meet their neighbors, and perhaps just their neighbors on this spot there, because there is a possibility, a bar or something like this.
That's
so this was, because this was an encounter. And this is what is really nice in projects in outside space, because you really meet, not every day and not all the time, but you meet, and sometimes, or you made also difficult and violent encounters, of course, but you made also the other ones.
Yeah.
And but maybe I'm misunderstanding, but is the sustainability of what emerges in working with others and thinking with others, is that your, are you interested in that? Are you interested in whether these structures and spaces persist outside of that original moment?
I am interested in the history, in the moments, how can I say, in the experience, in the in the time we share together, you know, and we share, we this, because this is my idea of the monument, also, because I think a monument, even when not all is a monument, but because a monument is not bad to me, also an existing monument, because often it's a place to encounter, perhaps people exchange kisses in monuments, or it's a point to say we meet there and so on, but then, or to drink, or I don't know what, you know. So there's not bad points, but it's perhaps behind the how can I say, behind the idea of why the monument is there. So this make this possible. I'm interested for to give this kind of to create an event and to create encounters. It's about this.
But these are also then events and encounters that whose traces continue, right? Because it's, which is the great thing, right? I mean, it exceeds the event itself, right? I mean, you have a fixed duration, and so on. But once somebody has that encounter with this and experiences an alteration in relation to that encounter, they bear that alteration and trace into their future, right? So that it isn't, it's an event that produces things that exceed the event itself, which one can congratulate you for.
No, it's not that I need congratulations, but
I
that's really true.
Yeah,
that's
true.
What you say. First of all, me.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
I can only speak from me, because I made the encounters as well.
Yes,
not
exactly.
Only the people.
Exactly.
And I need the, I made, I was participating on this event, and for me, of course, it's alterating me in a very in a very strong way. And for example, my belief in art and philosophy is since I made these works with the people, stronger than ever, because I know every people, nobody says, what a shit Spinoza, what a shit, no, nobody, never, you know. It's not about to give them, to learn them Spinoza, you know, never. But it's there is a possibility, an enter. There is an opening. There is an entrance. No, and the same for art. You know, nobody says, nobody is against art. It's not true. You know, just perhaps not this. Okay, then you can discuss. Perhaps different. Okay, then you can discuss.
Yeah.
So, what I want to say to you. You must imagine, and this is the difficult in this kind of project. I cannot. This difficult, and also the beauty of this difficult, because when you do this kind of presence and production project, in a way, there is no documentation possible, yeah, because we're not, of course, you know, because we're not.
You don't track it.
Of course, you know, you cannot. And there is only anecdotes, mm-hmm, you know. For example, you ask me about, you know, there is an anecdote. I want to give you, you know, it's just, but it's difficult to, because it's just one thing. In the Bilmer Spinoza Festival, I invented a new beam. It's called the ambassador effect. It was an art historian, very good one, from Venice. She made her studies in Venice. And I invited her to be the ambassador, but not the ambassador of the Bilmer Spinoza Festival, but the ambassador of art history, of art and art, mm-hmm, history. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not an art historian, I don't know one, so I, mm-hmm, cannot tell her the people. And then, you know, what happened, the people of the neighborhood went to her and asked her about books they didn't understand. But, you know, shitty books like Da Vinci Code, or, I mean, you know, I mean, or how is your, the name, King, Don King, or I don't
Stephen
know.
King.
Yeah, I mean, no, books, a little bit, obscurantism books, or films. They came and asked her, because she was the ambassador of the art, what to think about. Yeah. So, you know, something, I think this was great, you know, that somebody goes there and asks, I don't understand what happened, tell me, you know, so this is something not expected, and but also very, you cannot count it in a way, it's just an anecdote, but it gives me also a lot of pleasure myself, and power also to think to what is possible. When you mean me, what is sustainable? Is this sustainable? I don't know. Perhaps yes, because Vittoria was her name. Perhaps because she was really serious, because she could tell to the people perhaps something about this book. I was not aware about.
I understand why it wouldn't be commensurate, but why not record then a series of anecdotes as a meager attempt at documentation?
I never thought on this, that's true. But, you know, the problem with anecdotes, it's a little bit, the problem, there are everybody, I mean, it's open end, and that's an anecdote, everybody has an anecdote, it's true. Why not? Why not? I will think about perhaps as when we do it very clearly, when I can find a kind of way how we can share this really clearly, and how, and also is it just, you know, because anecdotes often are not so, you know, mm-hmm, after they goes another way, you know, because this is why it's an anecdote. So, but
methodologically, would you be upset if Eduardo, listening to what you've just said, then tried to do something like this in Princeton? I mean, methodologically,
I do it all the time, you know, in my classroom.
I mean, would it be something that you would aspire towards to see these 10 principles, for instance, being enunciated by others and enacted by others? Or not? Is that not of interest to you?
No, I mean, it's not about the interest. It's his interest or your interest. Yeah. But I'm absolutely happy, but it's not my interest.
It's not your problem.
Why I wrote it? I wrote it for me, to be clear me, to tell them, look, you call me a political artist, mm-hmm, okay? I tell you, yes, I try to work politically. Means to choose my material. Means to use always as a platform. Means to lay out the thing, you know? Means to be a warrior, means to have a mission, you know what I mean? And that's why I cannot respond to him. Right. But, I mean, it's not for the other, it's for me. And then I make public one, and then now people in Switzerland, I was just 2 weeks, it's another anecdote, in Switzerland before, and somebody, because I made it, these 10 points, he called me an authoritarian, you know? Because it seems this makes now authority, but I have to pay for it. It's okay. But what I wanted is to not say, no, I'm not a political artist, but say, look, this is the points I have no problem to to call this working politically.
And actually, what I like about that too is it's a way of saying, you know, if somebody says, "Do you think that your art requires a political practice?" Your answer is no. It doesn't require a political practice because it is from the very beginning a political practice.
Yes,
it doesn't require one.
Absolutely.
The choosing of the location, the making of the form, all of this is already in advance a political gesture.
Yes,
I like that very much.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
So this everything of this I can explain.
Right.
I mean, perhaps I'm not right. Huh? I'm okay. I don't want to be right with this.
Yeah.
I just want to be logic in what I'm doing. So this why I wrote.
But I think the other thing that I just want to mark as well is when you have these projects on Gramsci, Spinoza, Bataille, etc. In these, I mean, I know that one of the criticisms has been that, well, what are you doing? You take these projects in these particular neighborhoods. Nobody there is going to understand these works. Nobody's going to. You're not addressing the alienated conditions and so on. It seems to me that the way you describe what the effects are or what you would like the effects to be are totally great in the sense it's not a question of doing a close reading of these texts with these people.
Right.
It's a way of taking what you have gathered from these figures and that have these things that have been important to you and conveying them to others. Emerson at one point says that a revolution happens when your thought becomes the thought of someone else. So that it's this modest alteration, change, but it takes place at the level of an encounter.
Mm-mm.
Where you say something to someone that moves them.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that produces a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like what you say, gather, because it's absolutely this.
Yes.
I'm not a philosopher, I'm not a... I didn't study comparative philosophy or so,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But just I gathered, I absolutely agree, something of these persons.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I choose them carefully.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm completely in love with them, no problem. But it's true, I cannot make you a big, you know. And I don't want it, because to me, it's like, and this is why I think a lot of people don't understand, but that's not a big problem for me. But it is like... it's like how can I say somebody on a place on another,
mm-hmm.
but it is not. But it could be, and this is how I see it: that somebody can replace the name Spinoza,
mm-hmm.
for example,
yeah.
with another,
yeah.
and come there for you could say it's the place where I go in internet. To internet,
yeah.
or it's the place where I go to meet my neighbor,
yeah.
or it's the place where I can be a little bit in freedom from home, because at home I have only problems, or
mm-hmm.
it's a place where young kids are, or I don't know, you know. So, but I call it Spinoza Festival, and they call it, they did call it differently.
Yeah.
So that's about it,
yeah.
you know. And that's why I don't... But there was never a critique I really had a problem with, because this is the old critique of the artist who has to educate the people, or I don't know what, because I don't know more than somebody else.
Yeah.
So why should I educate something?
Yeah. Yeah. Because we had thought about this as perhaps a closing question, just because I know that people raise this issue often in relation to your work. And it's the question of the market and the way in which one, because you have, I think, rightly said that doing art politically doesn't mean positioning your art either for or against the market. And we absolutely think that that's correct. And I was just wondering if you could say something about the way in which about the market's capacity at some level to absorb every possible position, almost. That there's we're left asking if there's an outside to the market. And I suppose that the logic that says that one can be neither for or against means that there's no outside to the market. One has to be inside the blizzard of the market, let's say, and navigate one's way in something like that. But that there is a way at the same time that everything can become part of the market, that even an exhibition about the market becomes linked to the market in some way. So that the... the market, you could say, is the displacement or the exposition of the market, of everything that can be contained and everything that can be said about it. And I don't think that we can decide these questions analytically or anything, but it's linked in some way to this question of complicity that came up in regard to the issue of appropriation of materials that aren't just yours and so on. Is there a way in which you can maybe say something more about your inscription, but also your resistance and how you think about it in mm-hmm. relation to
yeah.
the market?
I mean, for me, when I took very late the decision to put my work in the field of art, I immediately thought to myself, I thought differently, but also I want to show my work in museums. Mm-hmm. I want to show my work in galleries. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a gallery at all. I mean, but I decided that's clear. I want to do a work in institutions, and also I want that my work is outside. So mm-hmm. in the beginning, I started. For example, I didn't start with outside work and then I ended in the museum. For me, it was clear from the beginning. That's it. And I decided a lot of things about the market. My friends at this time, the left wing, the alternative, all my friends, they were my friends, no problem, and they stay my friends. They say, no market, no market. And I thought, you are naive. You are the knife. You are the knife. I had no gallery. They perhaps had more chance to have one at this point. I said, why to say this? Is this because you have the fear to affront it? You are not enough faithful to what you do? You think it will change something? So to me, the question of the market is a question as the question of reality at all. Do you have to confront? You have not to think in the beginning that you are without errors, that you go through without errors, that you make not mistakes, that you will not be hurt for this and criticize and everything. But I think the best way, the only for me possible to respond you is to take it as a reality, mm-hmm. but not as my reality, as a reality with as other realities, and to confront it without a specific negative, but also without a specific positive, mm-hmm. but just as something happened, you have to confront and you have to be concentrated so strongly on the work that you must be convinced yourself that your work mm-hmm. will go through this without, not without pleasure and so, but without losing the center of it. So that's my response. And, you know, even to, my response is to be concentrated on the work and not say there is no market or there is market or, because even when I start to speak about the market, I make, and this is a strategical error, you know, not a tactical error. I make, you know, to keep concentration, stupidly a little bit, on my work. You know, and to be faithful and to have to convince that my work will not resolve, but will be the power who goes through this because it has another objective. And because it's not for the market, which means no objective other than be into the market, but also not stupid against it, because then what's about, you know, because it's about the work. So that's why... to me, the market is one part mm-hmm. of the reality, but one a very, not a small, but one.
Yeah.
One. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow I will be do a lecture, and I will try to respond to. I wrote it. That's why I can citate it.
Yes.
How can I, through my work, be in contact with the world?
Yeah.
How can I, in this world, create my world? No. Create a new world, mm-hmm. and how can I, with my work, create a new world?
Yeah.
This is really the question about the world. Yeah, I mean, I would be happy that my work is read as a world, of course.
Yeah.